Well, I think summer has finally arrived. I think we're in for a good week, aren't we? It's a lovely day out there today, but we've not quite had the summer that we... Well, no summer in this country is predictable. I was out at Market Overton near Rutland Water in... Was it July, I think it was? Was it August? I can't remember. But I was over there, and I was in over there when suddenly the heavens opened, the rains came down, there was a crack of lightning. There was a strike of lightning and a crack of thunder almost simultaneously. All the lights went out where we were. Probably the whole power went off in the village, and we were in the middle of a remarkable storm with its lashing rain and thunder and lightning. Matthew chapter 14 is a chapter of storms and dramatic change from chapter 13. When you look at chapter 13 at the beginning of the chapter, it says that the same day Jesus went out of the house and sat by the lake. Such large crowds gathered together around him that he got into a boat and sat in it while all the people stood on the shore. And he taught them in parables, and that's Matthew chapter 13. And you come to Matthew chapter 14 and suddenly the mood changes. It's a difficult passage to read, the first part of the chapter, when John the Baptist is beheaded. I really should have given him a warning before I read it, I think, because it's this storm has arrived, and this is the first storm of the chapter with the execution of John. John had been arrested and imprisoned for speaking out, for speaking the truth, as many people might do today. And as a consequence, he was eventually executed, beheaded, because of what happened. So, John has died, and the disciples, it tells us in verse 12, that the disciples, John's disciples, they come and collect the body, and they take him and bury him, and they come and tell Jesus, verse 12 at the end of it. They went and told Jesus. And no doubt Jesus would have been upset. This was his cousin that this had happened to. And when we read what he did, when he heard what had happened, verse 13, he withdrew by boat privately into a solitary place. And then in the next section in the passage, we have another storm brewing. You have to look in the other Gospels to realize that. But what's happened? The crowds have followed him. He's gone off by himself. The crowds have followed. And verse 13 tells us that they'd followed on foot. And it tells us that eventually Jesus came back, saw this large crowd and had compassion on them and healed their sick. And then eventually the evening comes and the disciples are ready to say, well, you know, it's evening time now, this crowd's here, but they can go. And they're ready to send them home. And they want to send them home, but Jesus says no. And he sits them down, and he takes five loaves and two fish, and we have another miracle of Jesus as he feeds over 5,000 people there. And then after that, it says, verse 22, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had dismissed them, he went up onto a mountainside by himself to pray. Why did he do that? Well, I think John 6 gives us a clue, because in John 6 you've got the record of the same account, the feeding of the 5,000, a record of the same account. But what it adds in there, it says that the people, and some people from amongst those 5,000, it says that they intended to come and make him king by force. You see, it seems that they wanted to take on Rome, and here was an opportunity. There were about 5,000 people there together. There was someone who clearly could be a leader, Jesus standing up and speaking to the crowds, and there would have been people there who thought, this is our opportunity. This is our opportunity to take on Rome. And wanted to force him to be their leader, and then who knows what would happen after that. But Jesus will not be subject to anyone else's agenda. Those people who wanted to do that didn't understand the reason that Jesus had come. There's a storm brewing. And it seems that Jesus wants to get them away, get the disciples away from that. And because it says immediately, he told the disciples to get into the boat and go on ahead. Just wanted them out of the way in case the disciples might start to think, yes, here's an opportunity. This is what we should be doing. And then he tells the crowds to go as well and eventually sends them home and he goes off into the mountain to pray. So then we come to the third section of the passage. The disciples climb into the boat, head off into the night as Jesus had told them to do, and they head into a third storm. They find themselves in trouble. The Sea of Galilee, about 13 miles long and 7 miles across, and it's surrounded by hills. And what can happen there on the Sea of Galilee is the wind can suddenly be funneled down through the hills around them and whip up a bit of a storm on the sea and make things uncomfortable. The disciples, they find themselves in trouble. Jesus comes. Verse 25, during the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went out to them walking on the lake. The disciples think it's a ghost, but he assures them that it's not a ghost. He says, it's me, it's only me, assures them who it is. And then we have this strange request. Peter, he says to Jesus, and it's a strange request when you think about it, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. And Jesus says to him, come. Peter climbs out of the boat, steps on the water, starts to walk on the water, but then he starts to think as he takes his eyes off Jesus. He calls out to Jesus and Jesus rescues him and saves him. And then it finishes with this verse in 32. When they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. All of that's really by way of introduction, just to go over the passage again and see what's in there. And we could make an application here and say that life is full of all kinds of storms. And they come in all different ways, and like the disciples, we're in trouble. They were in trouble in the middle of the lake, and we could say that Jesus cares, and that Jesus comes, and that Jesus calms, as he calms the storm and the troubled seas, and comforts them. He cares, he comes, he calms, and he comforts. Now, those things are all true of Jesus. He does do those things for us. But I think we'd be missing the point of what's really going on here, if we were to do that. Well, before we come to that, let's just look briefly, make one or two comments about the disciples and one or two comments about Jesus. And then we're going to put it all together and have four things that we need to be doing in response to what we read here. So firstly, let's just take a little look at the disciples. The disciples, they were upset. John's disciples would have certainly been upset over what had happened to John, and the disciples of Jesus, who would have known what had happened as well, would have been upset. They would have certainly heard about what happened to John. And then we get to this point where they want the crowds to go away. I think we can all identify with that. There's times when maybe we're upset over something or concerned out and over everything, and we just want people to go away. And I just want to be by myself. And I think there's something of that here as the disciples say to Jesus, you know, tell the crowds to go away. They can go off to the villages and buy some food there. Now, I'm not sure whether they could get food at that time of night in some of those villages, but they were upset and wanted the crowds to go away. And then a little bit further on, we see the disciples, they were struggling. They were clearly struggling. They'd done what Jesus told them to do, to get into the boat and to head off to the other side. But then they were struggling. It says in verse 24, they were a long way from land. In Mark, it says they were in the middle of the lake. In John, it says they were between 3 and 3.5 miles from land. So if it's 7 miles across, Between 3 and 3.5 he's bang in the middle of the lake. And 3 to 3.5 miles on rough waters and a storm around you is not a nice place to be. They were struggling. And it says as well, they were buffeted by the waves because the wind was against them. And it was the middle of the night. It says that Jesus comes during the fourth watch of the night. That's probably 3 o'clock in the morning. The middle of the night, buffeted by the waves, a long way from land, they were struggling. And they were frightened as well. Jesus comes to them walking on the water. And it says, when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. They were terrified. And maybe we can identify with some of those things at different times, upset and struggling and even frightened and terrified. That's something of what we see of the disciples in this chapter. And then a brief look at Jesus. What do we see of him? We see him upset and we see him hurting over what had happened. I think that response of verse 13, withdrawing by boat private to a solitary place, he was upset and he heads off by himself. We see him caring as well for others. Although he went off by himself, when the crowds followed him, when they heard of what he'd done, they followed him and headed off to him, then Jesus came back. He landed and saw a large crowd. He had compassion on them and healed their sick. He has compassion on the crowds. Jesus is the one who has compassion. And then in the following verses, when he feeds the 5,000, we see him providing for the people. The disciples want him to send him home, but Jesus says no. And we see him providing for the people. And then when Jesus walks on the water and the disciples are terrified, he says to them, don't be afraid. Take courage. It's me. Don't be afraid. We see him comforting the disciples. So a number of times in this chapter, we see Jesus caring. And we see Jesus praying as well. It tells us that in verse 23, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And then when he went off by himself in verse 13, did he pray? Doesn't say he did, but he probably did. So at times through this passage, we see Jesus praying. And all of those things, hurting and caring and praying, are things which Jesus still does today. He hurts with us. Hebrews 4 speaks about him sympathizing with our weaknesses. He hurts with us and identifies with it. He cares for us. Jesus is the one who cares. Peter in 1 Peter chapter 5, which we'll be looking at tonight, as I do come back tonight, Peter says that he cares for you. It's a wonderful truth and a wonderful comfort to know that he cares. And he prays for us too. In John 17, you find him praying for his disciples, but then you find him praying for all of those who will believe through him after them. Hebrews 7 speaks about him interceding on our behalf, praying for us, representing us. He hurts and he cares and he prays today. We see him, other things about him. We see him calling, as Jesus said, come. We see him saving as he reaches out his hand and catches Peter, who is sinking. So we see some of the things that Jesus is like. So what do we do with all of this? Where do we go with this? Well, I've got four things that we need to do from this passage for us today. And let's just look at these. Firstly, the first thing we need to do, we need to grasp who Jesus is. We need to grasp who Jesus is. There's two storms in the gospel accounts. The previous one is in Matthew chapter 9. And when you read about that storm, and elsewhere in the Gospels as well, the response to it was, it says that they were terrified. They were terrified. It's interesting, that first storm. There were three megas in there. There was a mega storm. That's that Greek word, mega. There's a mega storm, enormous storm on the boat. And Jesus is asleep, you remember that, and they wake him up. And he stands up and he says, "Peace, be still." And then there is a mega calm. And like a mill pond, it must be. But there's another mega. It says they were mega terrified. They were terrified. Who is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. That was the previous storm. And that's how the disciples were left after that. What's going on? Who is this? But this time, it's different. This time, we read the account of what happened. It says, eventually it says, when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God. Truly, you are the Son of God." And there seems to be a progression here in their understanding of who this Jesus is. The Son of God. God himself. And the great purpose of the Gospels is to show us Christ and reveal Christ to us. And to show us who he is, he's the one who is God. And his miracles demonstrate that. A lot of the events that we see happening in there and his power and his miracles are there to authenticate who he is. And at the end of this chapter, this is what the disciples say, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The gospel accounts, they tell us who he is, and they tell us why he's come, to rescue us, to go to the cross, to bring us back to God. The gospels are full of his miracles, turning water into wine. The lepers who were healed. A man lowered through the roof, and Jesus says, firstly he says, "Your sins are forgiven," and then he says, "Get up and walk." The storms calmed, the dead raised. His miracles demonstrating who he is. But the gospel is full of his claims as well. He claims that he should be honored as God in John chapter 5. He claims to be equal with God, John chapter 10. He accepts worship as God. We need to grasp who this Jesus is. Not just a man, not some kind of reincarnation. If you go on a couple of chapters, he asks the disciples, Matthew chapter 16, he says, who do people say that I am? And he say, well, some say John the Baptist, and some say Elijah, some say Jeremiah, some say one of the prophets, some kind of reincarnation or something, or just figuratively speaking. But no, this Jesus is God himself. God become man. God in the body of flesh. God in a body. This Jesus is the God who we have read of in Psalm 19. The one whose glory is declared by the heavens. The one whose law is perfect and trustworthy and right and radiant. This is the God that was sung of. The one who holds the ocean in his hands. The one who has numbered every grain of sand. We need to grasp who he is. This is the God that we know of from the Old Testament. And we read of in the Old Testament. And just particularly thinking about Job. Job chapter 9 and verse 8 says this. "He alone," speaking of God, "spreads out the heavens and treads on the waters of the sea." I wonder if those who knew the scriptures at this time when this event happened, whether that would have come to their minds. The one who spreads out the heavens and treads on the waters of the sea. Truly, this is the Son of God. We need to grasp it. The God of Job. This morning, I read again just before coming. I wanted to read them. Those four chapters at the end of the book of Job. And they're great chapters to read. If you want something to take your eyes off yourself and look to God, read those chapters of Job, the last four chapters of Job. This Jesus is the one who is God. And we need to grasp that. Oh, yes, we know it. But it needs to just fill us and take a hold of us. So that's the first thing we need to do this morning. We need to grasp who Jesus is. And then secondly, we need to know that he cares. We need to know that he cares. This verse 27, when they saw Jesus and they were terrified, Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." Living as a Christian does not mean everything will be plain sailing. We do face all kinds of storms, and they can cause us to question whether he really cares. He does. He cares. We see it in this chapter as he has compassion for the crowd, as we see him providing for the people, as we see him comforting the disciples. Jesus reveals the heart of God, the one who cares. And as I've already said, 1 Peter 5, it says that we can cast, or that commands us and tells us to cast all our anxiety on him, because he cares for you. This morning, are you hurting or struggling or afraid? Remember that he cares. When we hurt, he cares. When we're struggling, he cares. When we're afraid of what might happen, he cares. Listen to Jesus. Take courage. It's me. Don't be afraid. So we need to grasp who Jesus is. And secondly, we need to know that he cares. And then thirdly, can I suggest that we need to get out of the boat? We need to get out of the boat. Verses 28 and 29. "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. I've often wondered about this passage and this request. It's a strange request. Why did he say that? Why did he do that? If it's you, tell me to get out of the boat. Tell me to come to you. What was he thinking when he said that? Why didn't he do what he'd done before? And he thought, ah, yes, a storm. I remember what we did last time. We woke Jesus up and he stood up and he said, "Peace, be still." Maybe he can do that again. Here we are in another storm. But that's not what he did. If it's you, tell me to come. Why did he do that? Well, I think the reason is, I think there's a venture of faith going on here. I think this is an opportunity to trust Jesus and to trust God. It's not just a step of obedience. It is a step of obedience because Jesus did eventually say, "Come." But there's something happening before he gets there. There seems to be a proactive step, an intention of wanting to trust Jesus and to step out. I think we do like to live within our comfort zone. I don't think it. I know it. I know what I'm like, and I suspect you're probably the same. We like to live within our comfort zones. Often we're only willing to do what we think we're able to do. We can start to trust in all that God has given us rather than trusting in God himself, trusting in the abilities that God has given me. God has given me the abilities, therefore I can do it. And we start to trust in all that God has given us rather than trusting in God himself. I wonder if we need to get out of the boat. And I'm not sure what that boat might be for you. But it's not presumptuous. Peter didn't just immediately climb out of the boat. It wasn't presumptuous. Peter said, "If it's you, tell me to come. If it's you, tell me to come." And Jesus says to him, "Come." And Peter climbs out. Imagine that moment, stepping out of the boat. He said he wants to do something like that. Jesus has said, "Come." Stepping out of the boat, away from the security of that, standing on the water, What's going to happen? Never done it before. No record of anyone having done it before. That moment as he steps out in faith and trusts in what Jesus has told him to do. And with the command comes the power. Jesus will give us all that we need to do all that he calls us to do. So it wasn't presumptuous. I think it was a venture of faith, wanting to trust God, but looking to Jesus to call him to do it. I wonder if we need to get out of the boat. I know when I heard that Lydia was coming this morning, I thought, Lydia's someone who got out of the boat. Am I right in thinking you'd never been on an aeroplane before you went? So there's someone willing to go across to Senegal, having never been on an aeroplane, to serve in a country she's never been to, which is not an easy country to live in. I think there's something of a venture of faith there. I think of Jonathan and Naomi. I often think of them, and I often tell others about them. Wanting to prove God, wanting to trust God. I think Jonathan and Naomi, wanting to get out of the boat and live for God and prove him. It's not presumptuous. Yes, you still seek the Lord's will. And Jonathan and Naomi, for many years, seeking the Lord's will, talking to others here, going off to study, praying over where they might go, investigating different countries to go to, and then eventually obedient to Lord in that. But it begins by stepping out of the boat. Now, we're not all called to go and do what Jonathan and Naomi are doing. There may be some here who are being called to that, and we need to respond to that. But I think we need to just work out how we should be getting out of the boat and living for God and have that joy of seeing him at work. We need to get out of the boat. And then finally, we need to keep our eyes on Jesus. We need to keep our eyes on Jesus. Peter stepped out of the boat, but it sort of all went wrong. When he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You of little faith, he said, why do you doubt? I think it's probably a sermon in that verse itself. But Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. When Peter took his eyes off Jesus, that's when things started to go wrong for him. When he turned away, the fear began. He was afraid and he began to sink. Are you afraid? Have you got that sinking feeling in some way? Look to Jesus. Look to Jesus. Turn to Jesus. Look to him. Trust in him. And walk with him. We need to grasp who this Jesus is. He's the one who is God. We need to know and remember that he's the one who cares for us and watches over us. We need to be getting out of the boat. And we need to keep our eyes on Jesus. Let me finish with, it's a chorus that you'll all be familiar with, but I've changed it. I've changed just a few words at the beginning. Here we go. When the storms are near about, fix your eyes upon Jesus. He alone has power to keep. Fix your eyes upon him. Jesus is a gracious friend, one in whom you can depend. He is faithful to the end. Fix your eyes upon him. May God help us to be doing that and to respond to his word and doing all that he calls us to do.